Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. This is the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, episode 71. Welcome back to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. Entrepreneurism. Architects pursuing ventures outside of the traditional practice. The education of architects, the AIA, and how we all need to join together to build a better profession. These are all topics that we discussed this week with my guest at the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. He started his own practice in 1975. He dabbled in development, invested in real estate, merged his practice with a much larger firm where he's now partner, and he has designed some rather significant works of architecture. He was the dean of the University of Texas School of Architecture, where he continues to teach to this day. Larry Speck is most certainly an entrepreneur architect, and he's my guest this week on the show. Support for everything we do here at Entrepreneur Architect is provided by our platform sponsor, FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, and track your time. You can get a free 30-day trial just by visiting freshbooks.com/architect. Larry Speck, welcome to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Great. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. You and I met a couple years back, it was at AIA convention in Denver. The documentary film Architecture had just premiered, and you and I had both been invited to be members of a panel discussion following that premiere at the convention. And as soon as I met you and as soon as you started talking about the profession, I knew that we needed to connect here in the podcast and have a little conversation. So thank you very much for being here on the podcast.
Great.
And usually, as what I'd like to do on every episode is to invite you to sort of give us your origin story, go back to as far as you feel comfortable, and talk about when you decided to become an architect, why you became an architect, and then sort of give us a brief introduction to you and your story and your journey to where you are today.
That could be maybe long and boring, but I'll try to make it a little.
Well, it may be long, but I doubt it would be boring. But go for it.
So actually, I don't know why, but I very, very early on, maybe fifth or sixth grade, had it in my head I wanted to be an architect. And that's kind of weird because I grew up in a little hick town and there were no architects and my family didn't know any architects. I'd never met an architect, but I love buildings. And I don't know why, I just was obsessed with buildings and loved to visit them. And on summer vacations, my parents would indulge me and we'd go see some building I'd seen a picture of and just really wanted to be an architect. But, you know, by the time I got to college, I was like, well, do I really know anything about this? So actually, I double majored in college, and kind of germane to your podcast, I majored in both business and architecture. So I got an undergraduate degree in business as well as my undergraduate degree in architecture and then my graduate degree in architecture. And that was a really great opportunity. I was at MIT and they had cross registration with Harvard, and I was able to take some amazing, amazing business courses. Some of them in like managerial psychology that have just stuck with me forever. And then a whole lot of them in real estate because I thought I wanted to combine real estate with architecture. And so I was preparing myself to be a businessman as well as an architect. Well, you know, right after I got out, I immediately started teaching, and so I didn't know whether can I really be academic and an architect and do real estate. But I did make one kind of major foray in my early career to do a rather good size development project. And just found it overwhelming to try to do the architecture and try to do the, you know, being the developer and get the entitlements and all those things all at once. We struggled through it. We did okay, but it was just kind of overwhelming. So since then, I've certainly invested in a lot of real estate. In fact, in my 20s and early 30s, made more money in real estate than I did combined in my teaching or my practice. And still have a lot of investments in real estate. So it's something I'm interested in, but it's definitely been a sideline, and I'm an architect and I'm an academic. So from, you know, that early origin, I have been a faculty member at School of Architecture, University of Texas at Austin for 40 years now, was dean for 9 years, had my own practice concurrent to that for 20 years, and then I became a principal and joined my practice with a very large practice that had begun in Austin. We now have about 480 employees. My firm is Page. We have 6 offices, Houston, Dallas, Austin, Denver, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco. So I'm very much in the business of architecture as well as being an academic. That did the job.
Yes, yes, very much so. You are most certainly an entrepreneur architect from that description.
I am indeed, and I kind of like the business aspects of architecture as well as, I mean, in my firm, I'm primarily a designer. I've got partners who are much, much more involved and much more adept at the business side of things. But I'm interested, and I'm involved in that for sure.
Yeah, and if I mean, you've done development, you've done real estate, you've started your own practice. So even if you're not doing the business end of things today, certainly the things you learned during that time have helped you improve what you're doing today.
Absolutely, and I think maybe as much as anything, it's given me a perspective on the building industry and on the work a developer does that I could never have gotten just as an architect. I have an empathy and a kind of boots on the ground experience with development that I think makes me understand the process a whole lot better.
Yeah. Do you feel that all architects should look at themselves as entrepreneurs? Do you think there's a benefit to that?
You know, I probably don't think all architects need to. I think a significant proportion of architects need to, but it's a big, diverse profession. And, you know, I'm very cognizant because I've had all these students for all these years and I follow their careers. And, you know, some people are just not cut out for it. And that's probably okay. They can be a part of a larger team where somebody else does have that consciousness. And I realize it's not for everybody, but I do think we need a significant presence of that in the profession.
Yeah, I often think that it would be great if architects, rather than all coming out of architecture school dreaming of being the star designer, that we are encouraged to sort of follow the strengths that we have, and architects are more than just designers, that there are business-focused architects, and there are specification architects and structural architects and management architects, and they're all architects, and they're all you know, respected and looked at as equally as the designer architect.
Boy, I totally agree with that, and that's one of the things I love about being in a large firm, is that everybody doesn't have to be a jack of all trades, and they don't have to all be kind of half-assed doing all that list of things you just described, but there can be somebody who's just a really good manager, and man, they are so great to work with. Oh, I love those guys, and there are three or four that I work with regularly that I have so much admiration for, a really great project manager. Or I love the guys that can take care of the business development and really know how to do marketing and get out there and hustle, and God, those are fantastic architects. And you can't have a great practice without having people like that. And in a large firm, you can have those kinds of specialty people. And when I had my own firm and it was much smaller, I was trying to do all of that. And I was realizing, you know, I'm not doing any of these things at peak performance. I'm trying to manage all of it. But I love the idea of people who have found a niche and they realize what they're good at, and I have huge admiration for them.
Yeah, you know, I think the small firms, you know, if somebody's a sole proprietor or a very small firm, you do need to sort of know a little bit about each one of those pieces, and you certainly need to know the business end of it if you're going to run a business.
Absolutely. If not, you're going to be bankrupt.
Yeah.
And I've known a number of people who've been in exactly that situation. They're capable, maybe they're really good at specification writing, and they're really good at design, and they're really good at knowing how to put a building together, but they don't have a clue how to get work, or they don't have a clue how to manage a staff, and that's just not doable. That doesn't work.
Right. Do you, as an educator, do you think, in general, do you think the architectural education system is doing a good job preparing architects currently for the real world?
I think historically it has not. I do think there are signs now of improvement, and I'm really pleased about that. But I think it's, as much as anything, it's coming from a new generation of students who are kind of demanding that. They're not interested in being the star designer. That seems to them a little self-serving, and they're much more interested in being part of a profession that delivers a service to the culture, not just to their own ego. I'm blown away, actually, at this generation of students who are, you just don't find the real self-absorbed, I want to be famous kind of kid anymore. And they really are interested in being a part of a profession that delivers a really good service and does it well. So I think the students are demanding a little bit more variety in their education than maybe was true historically.
Yeah, at the University of Texas, you have programs for business and entrepreneurism. Is that correct?
Well, we have. We're fortunate that we have a business school that offers a suite of courses that are not a major, they're a little more than a minor, that allow students, if they want to do that as a part of their undergraduate education. And they're good courses, and it is all the rudiments you need. So it's extremely complementary to, and I actually am an advocate for that business education coming from business and not a bunch of architects teaching pseudo-business.
Yeah.
Maybe that's because I got my business education in a business school and with business students sitting next to me in classes. And that's actually a really good thing because you're hearing their perspective and you're understanding how they're looking at it. So I love it when our students do this suite of courses in the business school, and they're over there, you know, talking with the business students and interacting with them and getting the education in these areas they need education in. That's, to me, the best way it occurs.
And that's voluntary, though, correct?
It is. Not required.
Yeah.
And like I say, I mean, I do think there's room for some students saying, you know, I'm just not interested in that, and I'm going to find a niche in this profession that doesn't demand that of me. And there are such niches, and that's cool, too.
Right.
But I like the idea that it's available, and I wish probably we pushed it a little more.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much up to a student to decide it.
Yeah. From my point of view, I would love to see some basic fundamentals being taught as a requirement for all architects, because I think even architects who are going to become specialists and go to large firms, those large firms would benefit from their architects all understanding the base, you know, just the basics of business.
So I would agree with you there. And of course, everybody has to have a pro practice course. And we happen to have a pro practice course here at UT that is taught by a guy who he's perfect for teaching that kind of course. He has an MBA. He also has a law degree. And he has been a managing partner of an extremely large law firm, so that he knows what professional services look like and how they operate and the business side of that. And he's definitely got a different point of view than many of the rest of the faculty on how practices run and what the priorities should be. He's a hardcore business kind of guy, and he's fantastic in my book. So everyone is required to take Keith Shuley's course, which is a very, very strong introduction to this is a business, and this is how it works. And there's the legal side of it, and this is the financial side of it, and this is how you run a business. And
right.
he's good at that.
That's great. What do you think, as an educator and a relatively vocal educator, is what do you think is the most important change that architecture schools should be implementing today to prepare architects for the world in the future?
So I think one thing, this transition away from the notion of an architect as a self-absorbed, it's all about me, this is my design, this is, to transitioning into something where we see ourselves as a service to a larger culture, and that we see ourselves as a part of a larger building industry, and that we're more integrated and less a silo, kind of apart from other disciplines. I think this is fundamentally important for the future of education. We've got a couple of programs here at UT that are doing a bit of that I am extremely enthusiastic about. Many schools are doing this ULI Hines competition, which is Urban Land Institute sponsors it, and it's a voluntary thing still, but we probably have, I don't know, 60 people involved in that every January. And it requires you to put together a team of a planner, a developer, somebody in the business school, an architect, a landscape architect, a multidisciplinary team, and they work together to do this project for the Hines competition. And those students just walk away from that experience saying, damn, this is cool. I really love working with these people who are not architects. I like the idea of not being so absorbed in my own little discipline, but interacting with people who have other perspectives and who can give me insights and stimulate ideas I might not have otherwise. I think that's a fantastic program, and I think it's really made a transformational difference in a lot of the students who've taken the opportunity to do that. Another program where we've got going hot and heavy right at the moment is this Solar Decathlon, which again is a program that a number of schools do every year. And it really requires heavy-duty engineering as part of the, you have to design and construct this extremely sustainable house. And there are people from the business school, and there are people from engineering, there are people from architecture that are involved in the creation of the Solar Decathlon house. And I've got a graduate student right now who's co-chairing that. He was my TA for a while, and you know, lunch with Ryan the other day, and I'm just blown away at the experience he's having. And it's very entrepreneurial experience. How do we raise the money to do this? How do we transport this house to California? How do we interact as business and engineering and architecture students? How do we coordinate ourselves? How do we freaking get the thing done on schedule and, you know, manage our manpower and our resources? He's doing an amazing job of that. What a great experience.
I would think that many of the students who are taking programs like that and doing those types of competitions start thinking way beyond the traditional design practice. When you're inspired by working with other disciplines and seeing the possibilities of working as a team.
Let's take a quick break right here to thank FreshBooks for support as a platform sponsor. As a platform sponsor of Entrepreneur Architect, FreshBooks has provided funding and support for our mission to become an influential force in the profession of architecture. They recognize the need for small firms to build better businesses in order to be better architects. Have you downloaded your free 30-day trial yet? I encourage you to do that today. They set up a special page just for us where we can go and sign in and request a free trial. Give it a look. It's free and it won't take much more than a few minutes to sign in and look around. I think once you're there, you see how easy FreshBooks is to use, you'll want to give it a spin. To access your free 30-day trial, go to freshbooks.com/architect and make sure you enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section, because they need to know that I sent you there. Because when you support FreshBooks, you support me. And when you support me, you support our mission. So go to freshbooks.com/architect and enter Entree Architect.
What are your thoughts of architects, you know, leaving architecture school and not starting traditional design practices, but actually taking their education and doing something other than traditional architecture, but still being architects and starting other businesses? What are your thoughts on that?
So, you know, actually, I think the downturn in 2008, for all the pain it created in our profession, one of the benefits that came of that is that there were a whole lot of young people graduating from architecture school who had to be entrepreneurial. And they couldn't just fit themselves into a slot in the profession because those slots were dried up. And I know dozens of people who graduated in that period who did exactly what you're talking about. They said, well, okay, I've got these skills. I've got a lot of capabilities. I'm a hardworking, creative person. What can I do? And a number of them started design build firms where maybe at the beginning it's just, okay, somebody needs a deck on the back of their house. There's no architect anywhere that's going to take that as a job to design a deck, and then they have to go out and they find themselves a contractor to build their deck. I mean, that's just not feasible. But I can offer this service altogether. I know how to build a deck. I know how to put it together. I've got a strong back and good work ethic. So they would get together, three or four of them, and they'd be providing a service that the culture needs, that people need, but architects can't supply that. Just economically, it doesn't work for a firm to do that. But they were making good money doing little projects, and then maybe they'd graduate from the deck to the, you know, kitchen remodeling or the bedroom addition. And some of those people now have pretty sizable design build practices. There's one here in Austin called Moon Tower that it was three graduates of the School of Architecture who started out that way. And now they probably have 25 employees. They are doing medium-sized jobs. Sometimes they're doing the design and the building themselves. Sometimes they're just doing the designing. Sometimes they're just doing the building. Really, really good guys. And they've got a completely different kind of practice that didn't exist. At least I didn't know so many of those kinds of practices 10, 15 years ago. But now is an extremely viable way to make a good living, provide a service that is much, much more convenient and efficient for the client. To have all that packaged together, and they're doing really well. I think that's a perfect example of what you were talking about. Yeah, and then there are others that just go more on the developer end, but are just a little more conscious of architecture. And I've got another group of former students that actually I invest with them as well. But they were architecture students, but they're really doing development now. And they do nice work.
Yeah, and I think once you're an architect, you're always an architect, even if you're not practicing traditional architecture.
Yeah, it's in your blood.
Yeah. Yeah, I get so excited when I hear about those opportunities that architects are thinking outside the traditional firm and they do these other. I think the profession needs traditional designers, and I applaud those architects that do that. But I'm a member of the jury for the architecture business plan competition that's happened in the last couple of years. With Charette Venture Group, and the plans that get me so excited are the ones that are thinking outside the traditional firms, that are taking the ideas and the skills that they've learned and the talents they have, and they're applying them to other types of businesses, and that's really gets me excited, and I like it sort of cracking open the profession and making it more than what it's always been.
Right, I totally agree with that. And honestly, I think there have always been architects who've gone off and used their skills to do other things. I've got a student who, she was 30 years ago or something, and she became a set designer and production person in Hollywood immediately after graduating from architecture school. She's essentially making architecture, but it's for movies.
Right.
And then she graduated from that to being a director, and she's a very well-known director of major studio pictures these days in Hollywood. Her only degree is an architecture degree, and she came at that whole filmmaking from an architecture perspective. And she'd be the first to say, damn, it was a good background for that. That prepared me well for thinking about film and thinking about how places are a part of filmmaking. All the way to, lots of other students through the years who've gone into everything from accessibility consulting, and that really isn't a design practice at all anymore, but really experts on how mobility impaired people negotiate the world and know the politics of that, and are active lobbyists, and parts of nonprofits, and so there's all kinds of things you can do with the background we get in our training as architects.
Gets me all excited when I start thinking about the possibilities. You started your practice, your original practice, in 1975, correct?
Right.
So you've seen quite a bit of the profession over the 40 years since you've done that. You started your own practice, and then you joined Page. What have you seen in terms? Well, let me rephrase that. Currently, right now, AIA is promoting their I Look Up campaign, and they're trying to sort of educate the public about what we do and how we do it. And I've seen this happen over and over and over again, even in my time in the profession. What is your thought in terms of the improvement of the recognition of architects in the public and what we do in the time that you've been in the profession? Have you seen an improvement, or is it pretty much the same and it's just over and over again we're trying to hit the same nail on the head?
So honestly, I think for maybe the first 20 years of the time I was practicing, there was a public perception of architects that was not so far off base, I think. I mean, I thought we were doing okay. And then there's been a period, especially maybe the last 10 or 15 years, where I think we just totally screwed up. Someone got the idea that we could make the public appreciate architects more if we had a few star architects that they could remember their name and they could identify with them, sort of a Kardashian version for architecture.
Right.
But we get a lot of publicity, and that would be exciting, and it would get the public enthusiastic about architecture. And the media, architecture media, kind of bought into that. And so we got this star architect system, And we began to promote out to the public, yes, this is what architecture is. See this badass, crazy building? That's what we do. We're super creative, see? And we promoted name brands and, sort of designer labels on buildings. And we began to talk about these buildings as the singular embodiment of this one human being, which is complete bullshit. I mean, those buildings were done by dozens, if not hundreds of people, and putting one person's name on it is just kind of nuts. So we, for one thing, personified architecture. We made it all about an individual designer, and we promoted them as these kind of glamorous figures. And I think that's been a huge, huge disaster for the profession. It's made people think that somehow, oh, what architects do is they make a crazy-ass sketch on a napkin and, whoa, voila, it becomes a building. And there's no consciousness of all the roles that are played in between there. And also it's taken it away from being relevant to people. So it's sort of like, oh, yeah, that's that crazy stuff that architects do, but that doesn't have anything to do with my everyday life. Whereas architecture's always been about everyday life. It's about your home and your workplace and your community and your shopping area and your entertainment. I mean, that's what we do. We're involved in everyday life. But if we start telling people, oh, no, what architecture is really about is this wild building halfway around the world that is really crazy, or it's all about Dubai and all these object buildings done by different stars, that's been a really bad message. And it really doesn't describe the relationship between architecture and a culture. So I think we went way off base the last 10, 15 years. And I think we need to do everything we can to back off of that position and to reassert ourselves as a service profession that is about people's everyday life, that makes people's lives better, that makes their kids learn better in school because the school is well designed, that makes them get well better in the hospital because that hospital has wonderful ambiance and natural light and good efficiency and all the things that make a hospital really help in the healing process. We need to let the public understand that's what we do, and it's not that crazy-ass sketch or that one iconic building. That's a really fringy, abnormal part of what architecture is in a larger society.
Do you think that's something that is generally the AIA's responsibility, or do you think there's another way to get that message out?
Well, I think it is the AIA's responsibility, and I think they're discussing this currently. But I think it's also every freaking architect's responsibility that I need to be out there in the hustings discussing what it is architects do. I need to be telling my neighbors and friends, and I need to be making a talk to my book club or my whoever will listen. This is what architects do, and that's what we are. And it's not this kind of artsy, fringy, luxury item. It's an essential, absolutely vital part of any society. I've been teaching this class at UT forever, 30, 35 years, called Architecture and Society. And it is, I teach 700 students in that class every year, 350 in the fall, 350 in the spring. And I've now had about 10,000 students in that class. And, 80 of them out of that 700 are architecture freshmen, but the rest are every discipline you can imagine. And I love teaching that class because in that class, they really do understand the whole range of what architecture does. And kids walk out of that class saying, I had no idea. Oh my God, what the media has delivered to me is what architects do. That is so boiled down and kind of irrelevant to all the things we talk about in that class. So the lecture yesterday was on really how architecture affects your behavior. And, you know, especially for a college student living in a dormitory, whether you make friends easily, whether you don't make friends easily, whether you have good study habits or you don't have good study habits, these things are kind of shaped by what kind of dormitory you live in, what kind of opportunities you're given, what kind of campus you're on. And when the students see that, they're like, whoa, of course, that has a huge impact. But that's not something they've ever heard before. That class is an eye-opener to them that, yes, architects are all about technology, and architects are all about sustainability, and architects are all about, you know, sociology and psychology and urban interactions of people, and architects are all about, well, you know, they're about form too and aesthetics, but it's not the only thing. So I think it is up to universities, up to schools of architecture to be teaching that as part of the culture. It's up to architects to, maybe through their AIA chapters, have courses in junior high and in high school. It's up to the AIA, maybe for some larger publicity campaign nationally. All of that has to happen.
So it's everybody's responsibility. It's AIA's responsibility. It's the architectural education, the school's responsibility. I think it's every individual architect's responsibility to all be on the same page and all be talking about the same story of what architects are and what we can do for the society and what the profession is.
I think so. And actually, I think that's a really exciting challenge. I love doing that. I probably give 20 or 25 lectures a year just to civic groups about architecture. I love doing that. And people are so appreciative of hearing about what it is we do. They're super curious about architecture, but we don't give them any venues for getting a window into it. And, you know, a lot of times people will ask me, well, is there a magazine I could take that would be, you know, whet my appetite on this? There are plenty of them for interior design. And, you know, I have to scratch my head and, well, no, you probably don't want to go to the normal architecture journal. That's not going to do what you want because they're not going to even talk about those topics you're interested in. So it is a little bit of it's a sad thing that we have not made venues that people can get more plugged in. And I think exactly your podcast, I write a blog every 2 weeks. You know, social media is a good way for us to get that word out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the AIA's new campaign, I think that's their intent. I think their intent is to start educating the public on the benefits of who architects are and what we do. I think they are trying to steer away from the starchitects and do much of what you're saying. And I think that if other architects are open to what AIA is trying to do, I think we can all start making the profession better by telling the same story.
Absolutely. And I'm delighted to see AI really embracing this and taking it on.
Me too. Absolutely. I think we're probably getting close to the end of our conversation here. I'd like to ask you one more question. What do you think is the single most important thing young architects should be doing today to prepare themselves for success in the profession?
Gosh, hard to say single most, but actually I'm really interested. A group of the students here at UT have started a little program where before final review week, they have a little session that they organize where they invite faculty members and other people in to help them talk about their projects better, to help them describe what they're doing better, to be more effective communicators, but also to really have a clarity of what is it I'm trying to do here. And so those are not about what did you do, but how are you explaining what you do? And I think that's a hugely important skill to walk out of architecture school with, is the ability to communicate what you're doing, to be able to clearly understand your own priorities, and then to be able to articulate that and passionately let someone have a window into what it is you're excited about in what you do. So I would say if there's one thing right now I'd like to see emphasize more, or that somebody would walk out of school with. It's that ability to know what it is I'm doing and really be able to talk about that.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Larry, thank you very, very much for being with me here today.
Sure. Enjoyed the conversation.
Me too. Me too. And maybe we can do it again at some time in the future. Get a little deeper into some of the subjects. What you had mentioned that you write a blog. Where can listeners find that blog?
Actually, it's at larryspeck.com. And that's my own website that I've had for a number of years.
Okay. Yeah, I was there. It's very complete. So if you want to know anything else about Larry, larryspeck.com will give you everything you need to know, and you can read his blog there. So Larry, thank you very much. And maybe are you going to be in Atlanta this year?
You know, this is for the first time in probably 15 years, I'm not going to be able to make it to convention. But really germane to what we've just been talking about, the reason I can't is because Urban Land Institute, ULI, is having their national meeting in Houston that same week.
Oh, boy.
Probably
yeah.
Not good timing. and we have done two projects at an urban scale in Houston recently, and they're both ones they want to have tours and they want to have talks. And so I'm going to go and talk to the developers at ULI, but it's going to preclude me from going to Atlanta.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like your service there is more important.
Great to talk to you.
Yeah, me too. I appreciate you being here. So thank you. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
We'll
see
you
soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I love speaking with Larry. He's such an inspirational man. I enjoyed speaking with him in Denver, and I really enjoyed today's show. I think Larry has done such a service to this profession from so many different angles. I encourage you to go to larryspeck.com and check out what he's done. Drop him an email and say thanks. I know he's on Twitter as well. I think he may be at Larry Speck, but I'm not sure. You can search for him. But I thank Larry very much for spending his time here with us on the Entrepreneur Architect podcast. And if you like this episode or any of the other episodes that we've done here in the 71 episodes that we've done, please go to iTunes and leave me a review, because I would really love to know what you think. You know, I talk into this microphone every week and I send it out there and I get some response on Twitter and by email, but I don't get a whole lot of reviews, and I would really, really love your love at iTunes. So entrearchitect.com/iTunes. That's a link I set up that I'll send you right there, and you can leave me a review. That's a wrap on today's show. Show notes and a direct link to episode to download this episode may be found at entrearchitect.com/episode71. That is the 71st episode. Before we go, the quote of the week: an investment in knowledge pays the best interest. You know who said that? An investment in knowledge pays the best interest. Benjamin Franklin. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. I will see you next week, and I thank you very, very much for putting your earbuds in your ears and listening to my voice today. Thank you very much. I'll see you next week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glenn Gehry. Visit glengehry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.